Welcome. You are now listening to 107.5 FM, WRU.org. It is The Customer Isn't Always Right. You're probably listening on Wednesday at 8 p.m., which is when we air every week. If you want to catch old episodes, go on WRU.creek.fm. It's a lot easier to access via computer the old shows than it is the phone app for some reason. You can catch me on... also on Facebook, The Customer Isn't Always Right Talk Show on Facebook.com if you want to message me or get someone else on the show that you think should be on here. Today, we've got Mimi. Mimi, say hello.
Well, hello. Good evening, everyone.
This is going to be a different show. It's still, you'll see what's going on. We're still dealing with customers face-to-face, but this is what I was talking about at the beginning of the year, having not just servers and door guys and stuff on. There's other people who deal with other customers face to face, and it can also get Riley's a better word. Riley is not a real word; it's a person's name. Anyway, so we're gonna do some promotions right now, and then we'll get right at the show.
Hey Savannah, get your music played on the radio. Yes, you heard that right. Get your music played on the radio. We here at WRUU 107.5 FM are looking for quality local music. Share your talents for the city of Savannah to enjoy. All you have to do is submit your songs to music at WRUU.org. That's music at WRUU.org. The only thing we ask of you is no explicit lyric or content. So don't wait. WRUU in Savannah is excited to hear you.
This is WRUU, your radio station. Each of our hosts is just like you. We're your friends, your neighbors, and your co-workers. We're Windsor Forest Radio, and Ardsley Park Radio, and Liberty City Radio, and radio for and from every other part of Savannah, too. Like you, we can't keep going without covering expenses. So please help us by donating whatever you can. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
Tune in to Way Left of the Dial every Monday afternoon here on WRUU from 4 to 6 p.m. for Music with an Edge with Tom. It's Way Left of the Dial every Monday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m. here on WRUULP 107.5 FM.
Performers for Social Justice Awareness will perform Eve Ensler's The Vagina Monologues at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah in Troop Square on May 2nd at 7 p.m. This production depicts interviews with women in monologue format featuring topics of violence, injustice, body image, and sexual liberation. Although some vignettes are presented with dark humor, this performance is not recommended for pre-adolescents due to its controversial content. Tickets are available at Eventbrite.
All right, we're back. All right, let's get this started. All right, Mimi, what do you do? Who are you? What's your deal?
I am Mimi Mader. I am an attorney in town. I do defense work. I mostly try to help parents get their children back if deepfakes becomes involved for some reason.
Okay. Have you had any, did you work any like service industry jobs before, like while you were in college or anything like that?
In college and a little bit in law school. I feel like everything at some point is a service industry job. But I did the quintessential hostessing, serving, all of that through college. Grew up in Winter Park, Florida, went to Rollins College. Shout out Foxes. And of course, got to do a lot of work in the service industry there and definitely learned a lot of skills that I still use till today.
Right. Okay. That was going to be a question I asked. I had done an interview with a person who was head of HR, and they said that a lot of stuff that they learned during service industry helped them in the corporate world. Like, what is it mainly like just the being dealing with different types of people? Is a skill that translated to what you're doing now?
It's definitely a lot of how to deal with different types of people. And it's also very much learning how to communicate effectively with different kinds of people.
Right.
You're going to have to give a lot of bad news as a lawyer, especially, being on the defense side. Even if it's a small thing, it can have a huge impact.
Right.
So learning how to get the information across to a client without breaking them down, giving right. them something to work for, something to hold on to, making sure that they understand that you guys are a team, even though it feels like, you know, you're sitting there talking to opposing counsel all the time, letting the client know, no, it's you and me. I see this other person in court every day, but you are my focus right now.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I imagine it's got to be like, look, I've never been in trouble, so I don't know anything about that. You know what I mean? But like, I imagine it's probably very intimidating, you know what I mean, to be in the court and see you guys interacting, you know, and still have that, like, you know, people view lawyers as authority figures sometimes. So it's like tough to get out of that. Like, okay, this is my lawyer, regardless of the fact that they're talking to counsel, they're talking to judges and all that other stuff. So yeah, that's gotta be a crazy, wild, like, balancing act, you know?
And it's one of those things where, you know, I get to work with and against some really amazing lawyers.
Right.
And we expect that when we walk into court, we are ready to do battle with each other. It is absolutely nothing personal, but we are supposed to keep each other sharp for the betterment of the Savannah community.
Right.
And so it isn't just me protecting my clients. It's me ensuring that any arguments I make for my clients are also heard by the court for all of these other families we're dealing with. And it's a very tight-knit group. We specialize in this. This is our day in and day out. But that also means that to a certain extent, we're kind of trauma bonded. Like, we've had those terrible days in court where nobody did anything wrong, but just like the lights went out.
Yeah.
And the recorder went off and everything just, the air conditioning went out.
Things just don't work out. Life happens and stuff just doesn't work out sometimes. And I imagine, like, also too, like, a win in a certain case might also equal a win later on down the road because you made an argument.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So, like, setting precedent, which is like the other, I think the other thing that a lot of people don't understand is like seeing, okay, how this helps someone else in the future. It might not be helping you right now, but it definitely helps someone else in the future. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, it's stuff like that. But shoot. So let's go with, give me your top two or three interactions. Best, fun, happy, not, we'll get into the bad ones in a moment.
So, of course, we're not going to use any names because of attorney-client privilege. And I'm going to keep it incredibly vague. So yeah, I apologize. For some of the good ones, I did ask former clients if I could mention things very briefly. Mm. And I think my favorite interaction, there was a little tiny one. I was working as guardian ad litem for this child. And that means that I'm pretty much like my voice to the court's ear. I don't have a client specifically. I'm there for what is in the best interest of the child.
Right.
And it is this tiny little bundle of joy. And I've never had any kids myself. And I know you're supposed to protect the neck and hold the head and do the burping and all of it. And this little one was so good throughout the entire hearing. And it wasn't terribly long, but we're talking a couple of months old at most.
Right.
And all of a sudden, they start fussing a little bit and then spit up on me. And the poor foster placement is falling over themselves to apologize to me. And it's like, no, don't worry. I've had adult clients do this. This little one has more than an excuse to do so.
Yeah, like, we're good here.
But it was so amazing that in, you know, 30 to 45 minutes, I could bond so closely with this little one that when they get bigger, will probably never remember me.
Right.
But I will never forget that little face and those little hands and little eyes just searching out everything.
Yeah.
And the case has closed out really, really well. They're in a phenomenal position, have a life filled with love and just people that care about them and have gone above and beyond. And so those are definitely the kinds of moments that I hold on to very, very closely.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean
it's like got to be partially why you're there. You know what I mean? Being a defense attorney can't be easy. Like, it cannot be easy at all.
There is a reason that I have a therapist that I talk to regularly, and I call my mom a lot. Hi, Mom. And I cry. I also have a spider in my car that I yell at a lot, which seems to help with some stress.
Okay. Yeah, shoot. Gosh. What, you got another one of those? This is, like, good touching?
It wasn't necessarily touching, but there was one day where it seemed like everything was going wrong. Mm. Each of the four courtrooms have their own setups as far as like virtual participation. They have to have recordings to take transcripts, all of that kind of stuff. And in one day, we went from courtroom 3 to courtroom 2 to courtroom 1 back to courtroom 2 because there were so many errors. And at that point, everybody was just like, you know what? we're just here. Like, somebody grab a tape recorder and let's just keep moving. And to see all of these people that I work with all the time be able to care so much and transition so quickly, because what we do is so important. Like, this is not about us. Mm-hmm. If we are in there in, you know, full suits and everything and the air conditioner goes out, yeah, it'll be a sauna, but we'll survive.
You still got to do your jobs. Interesting. Yeah, I can imagine moving around a lot is... I can imagine. I can imagine moving on, like moving around a lot in that kind of a setting has got to take a lot of the steam out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When you're trying to have a full blown conversation or make a point, you know, I don't know. I don't know. It's got to be rough. It's rough.
It's, and especially because every courtroom seems to be very centralized. It is that judge. It is their staff that are in there, and so we know where to go and what to do based on which case we have, which is incredibly helpful because our minds are a thousand other places.
So that's a question. That's the thing that they don't. You know, I watch a lot of stupid. You know,
dun dun.
Yeah, yeah. I love Law and Order, but it's like I know that it's not like real by any sense of the word. You know, so does every judge has his own like clerk. Every judge has his own like everything. So
the clerks tend to move around a good bit. They are independent of specific judges, but we do become creatures of habit pretty quickly. And so it's really nice when you can learn the quirks of a special clerk and in a special courtroom.
Yeah.
And especially getting to know all of the like behind the scenes staff, all the administrative assistants, the attorneys for the judges that look things up. Mm. I would be so lost without them, to be perfectly honest. And it's one of those things where it absolutely takes the entire courthouse to help support these families.
Yeah. So did you ever have to do, like, criminal defense?
I've done some criminal defense, and it's not something that I've completely cut off. But in a criminal case, you might have, you know, you'll have one hearing, and then you'll have another hearing in a couple weeks or a couple months, and then further on down the line, and you don't get arraigned for a year or whatnot.
It's like less personal.
But in juvenile court, it is absolutely not unheard of to have a preliminary protective hearing, and then within, you know, a couple of days having the next hearing for that, and within 6 weeks having another hearing for that. So it is very intense and very courtroom-driven, and I absolutely love that.
Now, do they do that just because it's young people and they want to kind of push everyone
so it's more,
through the system, or is it?
It's more based on statute. Okay. In 2016, the juvenile code was kind of not rewritten, but there was a lot more organization and a lot more impetus put into ensuring that these families don't fall through the cracks.
Okay.
Because it's really easy if people aren't constantly filing motions on something, if nothing new is popping up. We have to make sure that we're coming back to make sure that everything's going right.
Right. I mean, I guess over time, some of these families can get displaced and then be separated and stuff like that. And that makes it a little bit harder.
Definitely.
Or a lot harder and then to get it done.
You have different kinds of like guardianship and different things like that. Because in dependency cases, the whole point is to get a child to permanency, whatever that means. Hopefully with parents or family. If not, then with a loving resource that can take care of them and provide what they need.
Okay. Interesting. It's all interesting stuff. It's also complicated.
It definitely is. And my poor fiance has to hear about it ad nauseum. But, you know, he puts up with it. So,
yeah. Very I mean, it's interesting. It's very interesting to say the least. Like, yeah, I'm sure it's mentally exhausting, but it's very interesting. To me, I feel like there's no more interesting professions than like being a lawyer. Or being like a therapist or psychologist. I feel like a lot of people are like, why, what, like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't know.
I wish I knew.
I feel like people are interesting. I just feel like people are interesting. And it's, I would rather hear a story or be, you know, highly involved in one to figure out, you know, what's going on and you know, kind of get an analysis of all these things, you know what I mean? Break
how
all this stuff down. Yeah.
Plugs into each other.
Yeah. It's interesting to me. It's very interesting. It's way more interesting than like, I don't know, driving a cab, you know?
I mean, you've got plenty of humanity there too.
Right. I mean, that was actually a bad example because when I was an Uber driver, people used to trauma dump on me hard and it was crazy.
I told you I was sorry for that Saturday night.
But it happens all, I mean, it happens all, in the service industry, it definitely happens all the time. But I mean, as I imagine as like a, I don't know, a crane operator. People aren't trauma dumping on you.
I would hope not. That could be very messy.
Any more good ones that stand out?
Well, there's actually, it's a whole conglomerate of them.
Okay.
There is a group called CASA. They're the Court Appointed Special Advocates.
Okay.
And it is this amazing organization that allows people that aren't lawyers to come in and help to ensure that, like, these kids are getting what they want. Because right now I have 128 open cases on my desk.
Jeez.
And I can work from sunup till sundown, and I often do 7 days a week to try to make sure everything's covered. But I'm human.
Yeah, you can only do so much.
And the CASA organization is phenomenal. They allow people from the community to come in, they get training, and then they can volunteer to help these kids. And it's amazing when we get to close out a case and the child is either going home or getting adopted or getting to that permanency, and we've been there for years. And the CASA has been there with us the entire step of the way. And we all get to hold up signs and we shake little things and we blow bubbles in the courtroom. And it's just such a great feeling to know that, you know, whatever efforts we put in are going to have a positive impact on this family and on this child moving forward.
Nice.
So thankfully that happens pretty regularly.
So how often does law in that arena, how often does law get updated or, I guess, refined?
So usually every year there's a pretty big update. There'll be one or two, like, very, very large cases. Anytime a case is ruled on appeal, that definitely can have the possibility to change things. I think the biggest thing recently has been AI being used, which should come as no surprise
with
to anybody.
As far as law is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I did hear something about this the other day. I listened to a podcast where we were talking about how most people now are just, like, instead of going and digging things up, they're just asking AI to, like, figure it out for them. Like, hey,
mm-hmm.
I have this and this going on. Like, what laws pertain to such and such and what's going on with this? I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that because I'm not a lawyer.
I don't know. It can be helpful to help narrow down what your real issues are.
Right.
Because if you're dealing with any sort of legal implications, it is stressful. It is messy. You're going through the emotions. That's why lawyers hire lawyers when they have something going on.
Right.
Like, you are in it in that moment. And the thing is that emotions are stressful and messy and everywhere. But walking into a courtroom, it is sterile and it is quiet, and you have to have all the decorum and sit there with a blank face, even though everything inside of you is bubbling up to the surface.
Yeah.
So it can be helpful for that. But there have been attorneys, I'm pretty sure all over the country, that have gotten caught using AI to try to write briefs and write motions and do all of this. And the thing with AI when it comes to law is the AI wants to say yes. So. Yeah. It's the, okay, find me a case that gives me what I want. And the AI will be like, yes, I can do that. Even if it doesn't exist, it'll make something
up. It'll make it up, yeah. This is like, small sidebar, it's just like, AI, people are using AI incorrectly, I feel like. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a tool. It's not, how can I put it? If we're looking at a gun, the AI is not the gun. The AI is maybe your a handle or the...
It's a couple of the screws.
Right. It's not anything really super important on the gun. It's, mm-hmm. it's... You should literally, if... butter. It's not making butter. It's spreading the butter. That's yes. All it does.
I agree with that.
You know what Absolutely. I mean? Like, so you can't expect AI to write a paper for you. Can you ask if you're writing that paper... If you have the paper written, you say, hey, AI, can you edit this?
Mm-hmm. Or analyze it.
Yeah, can you look at this and see if this makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you, you know, are there any grammatical errors? Like, is this set up the right way? You can't say, though, hey, AI, I've got a freaking paper due in 2 hours about this.
Write it for me.
Write me a paper. That's just not what you're supposed to do. And that's what a lot of people are doing. And it is causing people to, like, rot their brains out and so on and so forth. But it's just a better version of Google.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. It's just look at it that way. It's not going to change a tire for you.
And I feel like a lot of ways it's kind of mirroring what happened in the early 2000s with the .com.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, oh, well, the internet is going to take over our jobs.
Ask Jeeves.
And, yes. Jeeves is going to take over my job. That jerk. But I think in a lot of ways it can be incredibly helpful because
right.
I can't imagine doing what I do without the internet. And I'm sure in another 20 years it'll be, oh, well, AI is a great tool for us to use, but we're not married to it. Like, I can exist without it if everything fell apart and I had to go back and try to make, you know, a tent out of sticks. I could do that without being like, right. Siri.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You nailed that. Like, everyone should be able to exist without it. If you can't do your job without AI, you're not doing your job. AI is doing your job.
And then you're that easily replaced.
Yeah, and then you become replaced. Yeah, like, you know, I have a relative who lost their job. I believe they were editing medical journals. They lost that job to AI because AI can just easily edit those. They don't need a person to do that. But it sucks in situations like that. But at the same time, like, we all have to evolve. Like, it's this weird growing pains thing where it's just like, oh, this is great, but it's terrible. We need it, but we don't need it. Like, it's making life easier for everyone else, but it's also causing problems for people who are losing their jobs and so on and so forth. But it's like, I think we have to figure out how to use it correctly before we either shut it down or 100% rely on it. But I don't think we should ever be 100% relying on
anything.
Yeah. No, no. If we can't, like, if you can't, at some point, right, if we, and I know this is like way crazy and may never happen, but let's say we get like, what's that called? Like a solar flare, right? Mm-hmm. And it wipes out all of our cloud data and all this other stuff. What's written down? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the stuff that's written down is what we should be able to recreate. You know what I'm saying?
Ancient text about a copper seller that gave terrible copper to somebody from Mesopotamia, and that'll be it. Human history, one tablet.
Right, like I read this thing about how to build a frame for a house. We can do this. We don't need the internet. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But like, there's never going to be a day where AI comes to your house and builds your house for you.
Hopefully not. Oh, it could have a cute little face on, like little robots that deliver your food.
Yeah, but I mean, or it could end up like what was that Will Smith movie?
iRobot.
Yeah, it could end up like that. So, or it could end up like Terminator. Either way, who knows what's going to happen.
We're in for a fun ride.
Yeah, it's going to be great. We live in a very weird time, people. And, like, I'm old, but I'm not that old. And I feel like even in my lifetime, I'm going to see it go crazy. Mm-hmm. It's going to go wild, and the people are not going to know what to do. But that's a whole other topic. all right, so let's start getting into some of these terrible ones.
So the terrible ones are not...
And again, you don't have to be specific, obviously, because of things that...
Well, I'm just going to talk about some other cases that I've just observed.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Just as a complete person that has not been participating. It is always incredibly difficult when somebody loses parental rights, even in the best situation, even if a parent knows I'm not in a position to care for my child. They're in a loving either foster family or they're with family members who want to adopt and support them.
Real quick, before we move past that, foster families, and honestly, I don't know anything about that. I was in my own family and so on and so forth, but like, there seems to be like has the stigma changed around that? I remember like hearing about, like, when you hear about foster families and be like, oh man, it's just some of these people who are like real jerks and they're collecting a bunch of kids and then they're not really doing anything for the kids, they're just collecting money. Is there still a lot of like negative?
I'm sure there's a lot of negative stereotypes. And I'm sure it is very different in somewhere like Metro Atlanta than it is here. My general experience with foster placements has been very positive.
Okay.
And especially right now, there is some underfunding for DFACs. There is a gap as far as their budget is. And so what services and support are available to foster families is not what it used to be.
Okay.
And so I think if you were ever interested in becoming a foster placement to try to benefit off of that, you're going to have a rough road to hoe.
Right.
It is not as simple as like, okay, this kid comes in and then I get a check every month.
Right.
There are a lot of other moving pieces.
Right. Because I imagine like, I remember back in like just when I was younger, plus being like, I'm from the Northeast. So it's like a lot more people. So there's a lot more people falling through the cracks. And a lot more people who are claiming to do good who aren't doing good. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I mentioned down here, since it's a lot less people, it's a lot easier to regulate.
It's definitely a case-by-case basis.
Right.
Like with any large group, there are going to be people that are in it for the right reason and will take every single negative with the absolute biggest smile on their face and will take care of it no matter what.
Yeah.
And then you have people that, especially family members that step in who really want to care and want to put themselves in that position, but for whatever reason can't. You know, if you have a grandparent of the child who needs extra medical care and has all these doctor's appointments and stuff, if you are the aunt or uncle of this child and you're already taking care of your parent, it is not so easy to step in and take care of a child.
Right.
Because no matter how good, how wonderful, how sweet the child is, children are work. And they are often an incredibly great investment, but that doesn't mean it's not an investment.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely still an investment. Mm-hmm. And I grew up around a lot of children, and they're great most of the time.
But like anybody, if I don't get my nap, I get fussy.
Right. But yeah, like I said, emphasis on most of the time. You know what I mean? There are other times you're like, oh my God.
Please stop screaming. I'm sorry.
You are harassing me. I don't know what to do now.
You're bullying me.
Yeah. Yeah. You little child are bullying me and running my life, and I don't know what to do right now. Yeah, stuff like that happens. All right. Sorry. Continue.
But it's definitely one of those things where I have never met a foster or a fictive kin, which is just somebody that is like a friend of the family that helps, who didn't care enough to be in that position. Because if you're getting certified by a child placement agency, it's very invasive. They're going to check out your home. They're going to check out the backgrounds of everybody who lives in your home. You're going through multiple drug tests.
As like, they should.
As they absolutely should. Yeah. 1,000%. But like, my house is a mess right now. I don't want some stranger coming over and like, you know, putting their finger over the mantle and seeing if there's any dust. I have animals. Like, they bring in all the dirt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, it's one of those things where it absolutely is of value, but I can understand how daunting it can be if you're not expecting it right off the bat.
Okay. That's interesting. Because obviously if you're stepping up, you're wanting to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you have hopefully been, you know, someone has told you, okay, this is what's going to happen if this is what you want to do. You know, and to be willing to take that on is good. Like, I don't know many people who would do that.
And it's amazing to see the kinds of people that will come out of the woodwork. You know, if there's a family in crisis, the aunts, uncles, removed 20 times, that will come into town and surround this family with love. And I think that's one of my favorite parts of the job, is seeing not only families surround each other, but the community surrounding these families and supporting them and supporting these children. Because none of us are doing this to get rich. None of us are doing this to, you know, be able to retire to the Cayman Islands.
Right.
We're all in it for the right reasons.
Yeah. It's something that you want. It's very specific.
Yes, it is very specific. And there are days that are absolutely heart-wrenching. I've had to watch footage of all kinds of terrible things done to children. And it is definitely one of those things where when I get done with it, it's deleted off of my computer and out of my mind, other than the notes that I have that pertain to what I need to do.
Yeah, see, that's one of those things I wouldn't be able to deal with. That right there, like, I feel like I could deal with all the other stuff. It's just that stuff right there. Like, seeing it, like, having visuals of abuse or audio of abuse, and I'd be like, ugh.
Thankfully, that is the vast minority of my cases.
Good.
That is not something that pops up all the time.
I would want to kill people. Like, I would want to.
And it can definitely be a lot, but it's one of those things where part of the sanitation of the court helps with that. Because when you walk in there, it feels like a hospital room sometimes. And I feel like that's very difficult for families that are going through emotional times. But I think it also protects them in a lot of ways. Because things that you want to keep private and you want to keep to yourself and you don't want exposed outside of that, this is a way to get the necessary information out without embarrassing anybody needlessly.
Right.
Because that's not going to help anybody. Nobody's there to be like, oh, we're Bravo TV. Like, let's go get you.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it would be necessary to record or have any type of reporting on any of that stuff until, I guess, after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, letting the important things come out as opposed to nonsense.
Mm-hmm. And it's much more focused on where's the child now, how can we make sure that they get to grow up to be a happy, healthy adult? And what services can we support them with?
Yeah.
Them, the family, everybody involved. And so it's not like, oh, well, we gotcha. It's, okay, we see you need some help. How can we step in and help?
Yeah, how can we help you? Not like we're going to, you know, we're going to hold you by the, you know, by the belt for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. It's we're trying to help you so that we can send you off on your way, you know.
And of course, that's best case scenario.
Yeah.
It is a system within a system within a system. Bureaucracy, I think, is, it frustrates me to no end sometimes. And there's good reason for a lot of it, but it doesn't make it not frustrating in the moment.
Right. It seems like there's a lot of red tape when it comes to anything.
There's a lot of procedure, and there are good reasons for the procedure. Like, there is a reason that there are certain time frames. There's a reason that you have to give certain notices to people. A lot of times, if there is a client where there is another parent that isn't involved in the child's life, the parent involved will be like, well, why do you have to notify the other parent? They've never been involved with this child's life. We were never married. They never established rights. There wasn't anything like that. It's like, that's true. But the other parent does still legally have rights to this child.
Yeah, they're
and
on the certificate.
If there are resources open that that other parent could provide to this child for support, we need to be exploring those.
Right. We're going to have to get that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are there any laws or procedures that you've run into that are like, oh my God, this is so old. Why are we still doing it this way? Do you find that there's like a lot of that or not a lot of that?
No. Juvenile law especially is changing very quickly.
Mm.
It's one of those things, like you have, every once in a while we'll get a transfer over from probate court for one thing or another. And probate court, comparatively, just as far as judicial proceedings, moves slower, much slower. Juvenile court, we are in there every day. We are trying to do something.
Mm.
Even if it's just get an update, adjust things, figure out how we can help, we're in there. So to have this juxtaposition of this much more, I wouldn't say deliberate, but, you know, if you're dealing with wills and stuff, there isn't necessarily, the person whose will you're testating doesn't necessarily care. They've kind of gotten past that point.
Right.
In juvenile court, though, you have a living, breathing, currently becoming an adult little person.
Yeah.
And so the focus is very different. So in juvenile court, we get a lot of updates. Things move very quickly.
Right. Yeah, because these people aren't getting any, you know, they're getting old as as things are happening. So it's, you got to move as fast as possible, I imagine. So,
mm-hmm. And without, it's moving fast, but efficiently.
Right.
So trying to not do any more damage to a situation, but trying to make sure that we mitigate as much as we can as quickly as possible.
Interesting. It's just sounds like a cluster F of stuff.
It can be, but at the same time, I work with some amazing people.
Right. I mean, the upside there is that like everyone wants to do it. Everyone that you're involved with mm-hmm. wants to do it. Whereas like in a kitchen, not everyone might not want to be working there. You know what I mean? So you can't really trust everyone around you because you don't know who wants to be there and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So what other give us a second here. We're going to take a quick break here. All right. I'll just have to fix that later. It's fine. All right. Where were you? So any more like terrible things?
It's not necessarily terrible. But
downsides.
I think you'll find this amusing, and it's not necessarily a direct downside of the job. But the juvenile courthouse is right next to the jail. And so it is not uncommon to be getting out of my car to head into court, and I hear the live fire drills. So you hear gunfire all the time from them training. There was one time right after St. Patrick's Day, I was leaving the juvenile courthouse, and it had been a day. Like, it had just been emotionally rough. And I'm talking to one of the deputies, you know, just chit-chatting or whatnot. And there is a giant boom. It shakes everything. Like, it feels like the building behind us is about to crumble down.
Yeah.
And the deputy is losing their stuffing. I am absolutely at my wit's end. Like, here is the second coming. I don't know what the heck is going on. It turns out it was right after St. Patrick's Day. and they still had one of the live, like, cannonball style rounds.
Oh.
And so they were exploding that, but they hadn't alerted any of us to that fact. So we're dropping to the ground and, like, looking around, and everything just gets super, super quiet. And then you just hear over the radio, all clear. It's like, could we have gotten some warning beforehand? Like, I dropped my $7 coffee on the ground. I was looking forward to that.
That's crazy. Another question I thought about, too. Do you find, like, I get that there's, you know, you have to work with some of these people because you're the defense, and then there's, like, prosecutors, I imagine, or whatever.
They're referred to as SAG, Special Assistant Attorney Generals.
Okay.
But, yeah, same thing.
Do you ever find that those people are against you?
Personally, no.
And I mean, not just in the job sense, and or personally, but you mean like, are just for whatever reason not working with you?
I don't think it's that so much. I think that we're all wanting to make sure that our arguments are as sharp as possible. And, you know, whatever deck of cards we're given, we're given. Like, you can only color the picture with what your client gives you, be right. that DFACS itself or a parent or a family member or a child even. And I think we all understand that very, very clearly. What we don't want to happen is for one of us to make a mistake, not do something thoroughly enough, and for a case to be appealed, and for that appeal to be our fault as to why it's won.
Right. So here's the problem that I'm having with what we're talking about. It's the fact that it's just like, it would seem like every angle, like people on your end and the people on the, I think the SAGs or whatever, those people, you would want, I think, it feels like all of you would want a good outcome as mm-hmm. far as what's best for the child or the family or what's happening. But like what?
Our versions of what that means can be incredibly different.
Okay. This is kind of what I'm right. I don't know what I'm talking about, so it's tough for me to ask that kind of a question. I don't know.
So sometimes if there is a theoretical client who is, like, let's say it is a father who doesn't even know this child exists.
Okay.
They had an amorous moment with the mother. The mother never contacted them again. They have no clue they have any progeny in the entire world. And all of a sudden, they pop up. You could be in a great position, right? You get told randomly, oh, you have a child, and you could have a loving home, and you could have been talking about possibly wanting more kids, and it's an easy, like, swish in. You could be working on building a business, and there's no way that you have the time or energy or money or ability to dedicate to making sure this child is okay. Everybody's going to be focusing on how their part of it fits into the best interest of the child.
Right.
So let's say that you have no idea you have a kid and you want to support them, but you know that they have been with the same foster family for 3 years and that they're happy there. And that's who they call their parents. In their best interest, you might be very happy to be like, okay, well, I will sign away my parental rights, let them be happy. I would love to have a relationship with them in the future. Right now, I can't just randomly have a child dropped into my lap.
All right.
At the same time, you know, the people from the state might be looking at it like, okay, well, if this parent does get involved, how many resources are we going to need to expend for them to possibly engage in, possibly not, and how is that going to directly benefit the child? So a lot of it is not necessarily running through the motions, but making sure that all of those outer things that nobody thinks about are protected. Because when dealing with children and how you raise children, it is a constitutional rights question. Raising your child outside of certain criteria is a constitutional right. So you can raise them whatever religion you want. You can tell them they can have ice cream for dinner. You can raise your child until you're abusing or neglecting them the way that you want to.
Right. Whatever happens inside your house is what happens.
Unless it gets to be too much.
Right. Aside from physical abuse and so on.
And some other things.
Yeah.
But until it raises to the level of dependency, like, those are your constitutional rights. And protecting those are incredibly important no matter what. Because if one of us at the state court level slips up and misses something, we don't file the correct thing, we aren't looking into the correct resources, we're not providing the correct services, it can be appealed. And there is nothing worse than a dependency case going to the point where there's a termination of parental rights, child is adopted, case gets appealed, and years later, the appellate court looks and goes, oh, somebody at one of those first hearings years ago messed up. we're going to overrule this, put that child back with that parent tomorrow.
Jesus.
That is, I've seen it happen only a handful of times, but that is the absolute biggest nightmare. Like, for the children, for the parent, for the
adoptive resource. Because everyone feels like, oh, we got this win, and it's, you know, all of a sudden, then like 4 years later, someone's like, oh, actually.
Yeah, guess what? No. Somebody messed up down there.
It's just hard. Like, for me, it's hard to comprehend that everyone is working towards the same thing. Because in certain situations, it's kind of, it kind of feels like it kind of feels like they're not sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, yes, I understand about the, like, yeah, I didn't know I had a child and so on and so forth sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, dang. Now it's like, I don't know. It's tough.
It can definitely.
It seems real murky.
It can feel really murky until you're literally just sitting there looking at the statute and looking at some of these worst case scenarios. And you know what? That's why I'm not the judge. Yeah. I am there to present the argument for my client. I am 10 toes down with whatever you want me to argue within reason.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that this is not a child. It is a unicorn that was placed on your lap by Santa Claus. But, you know, even if it isn't something that I necessarily believe in, outside of the most phantasmical absolute nonsense,
right,
it is my job to ensure that the judge knows what your position is, why you want it, and how you want to get there.
Yeah. Like, so, what's the best way we can do this? What's your best case scenario? And
mm-hmm.
Here's the best way we feel like it could go.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, even even with clients that haven't come to grips with a child being a fully realized person.
Yeah.
Like, especially if there's addiction involved. A lot of times there will be the absolute most undying love for that child. But there is that block of addiction between where they are right now and what they want.
Right.
It is my job to present, like, there have been clean drug screens. There have been all these efforts made. There have been these engagement with services. But it's also the other attorney's jobs to be like, well, that's great and all, but what about all of this other stuff?
Right. Like, they did do all this other these other things.
They did great things.
Yeah,
but
like, I'm glad they're doing well now, but they did do this. Yeah, I get that, but it's just like, dang. At some point, like, you got to kind of forgive a person and see what happens. But, like, when you have another life involved, it's kind of, you can't just kind of do that.
Mm-hmm. And thankfully,
Jesus.
When there's a child involved in a dependency case, it is not only the department that's supposed to be looking out for them, which, like any government agency, is a government agency.
Right.
The resources are what they are. You also have, oftentimes, you'll have an attorney guardian ad litem, who is an attorney who is literally just supposed to tell the court what they think is in that child's best interest. And then a lot of times, if the child is of a certain age, they'll also get their own interest attorney. So that attorney tells the court what the child wants. Not what's in their best interest. Not like I am the adult telling this child what they should and shouldn't do. No, this 7-year-old wants a pony.
Yeah.
Your Honor, let's get this kid a pony.
And then that's crazy.
It's in unserious ways, it has popped up.
Yeah.
And there are great resources like equine therapy and things like that.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, there's just the most adorable requests made in the entire world. And then we also a lot of times have the court-appointed special advocates who are very much there to unlawyer the situation.
Right. Bring more human, like a more human element to the situation.
And their own life experience and everything like that to help the judge get a fuller picture of, like, I don't know the code section, but I know this kid needs braces.
Yeah.
I don't know how to make that work, but I'm telling you, Your Honor,
this is what this has kid to needs happen. Braces. Yeah, yeah. That's crazy. That's crazy stuff. All right. We had about 15 minutes. So let's start talking about, other than money, why do you still do this, or why did you choose to do this?
So initially, when I went to law school, I did not want to step in a courtroom. I wanted to draft contracts and send them off into the ether. I wanted to maybe do some light negotiations in the background. And then when I was in law school, I was working for an attorney named Bill Mastin, who was a phenomenal mentor. I cannot thank him enough for everything he taught me. But there was a preliminary hearing where he was running just a couple minutes behind. I was in my second year, and under Georgia's Second Year Practice Act, if you have an attorney over you, You can do a lot of things pretty much working as a lawyer.
Right.
You have to have the oversight, but.
Right.
And so, you know, I had helped work up this full case, and my boss was like, well, you know, Mimi, you know the case just as well as I do. Talk to the client, talk to the judge. If they're in a huge time crush, you already know how we're wanting to proceed with this. If everybody's comfortable with it, why don't you just take the reins, and then I'll be there partway through, and if there's anything you missed, I'll take care of it. Like, here are your training wheels. Why don't you pedal?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was so nervous. It was recorder's court. It was just, looking back on it, it was a comparatively minor thing.
Right.
But in that moment, I had all the empathy in the world for my client, because I'm sitting there going, I cannot ruin this. Like, somehow this speeding ticket is going to turn into a death penalty if I don't do something right. And of course it was. And I pretty much got to put my name and my client's name on the record and then inform the judge what our next step was. And that was it. Maybe 3 minutes in grand total. And I walked out of that courtroom feeling like I had a giant cape on and that I could fly to the next building. I was so addicted. Like, the inner theater kid in me was like, yes.
Yes,
I get to be a show pony. Oh, yes, I would like that, please. And so it's definitely been one of those things where it's very different from where I thought I would be.
Right.
But getting to be in front of a judge and actively participating and trying to better things is a huge point for me. I can't tell you how many times I'll come home, walk in the front door, and just start sobbing.
I mean, it's got to happen. I do it just my karaoke job.
I mean, you also deal with small children that way, so I understand. But it's such important work. My own mom is adopted.
Yeah.
And we don't know a lot about her family. She was adopted as an infant. And I have a huge heart for parents that get to a point where they know, you know, I am not in a place where I can provide what this child needs.
Yeah.
I'm not likely to be in a place. There aren't services right now that can provide for the safety and well-being of this child.
Yeah.
Like, instead of this being about me and what I want to prove, this is about my kid.
It takes a lot. It takes a lot of courage to do that, to have the self-awareness, mm-hmm. to be like, hey, all right, this isn't it. Like, yeah. I want this kid to do stuff, and I can't help them do stuff.
It's not that I want to be a hindrance, yeah. but because of life, because of the situation, I can't be that everything.
Right, exactly.
And some of the bravest people I've seen in cases are those that are like, I have to step back.
It's the way. It's the way sometimes. Those people doing that, you know, set off sometimes a chain of, you know, an event. Like, chain reaction of events that, you know, maybe now this person does something wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't know.
And maybe they just have that space and that lack of stress where they can go and get to that point in life where they can create that wonderful, beautiful relationship
yeah.
with this child in the future. But, I mean, when you're having to go to court every 6 months and you're having to sit there for potentially hours and hear, oh, well, you didn't do this. You didn't do this. You're failing on this. You're failing on this. Even if nobody's intending to say that, when you are one of the focuses of that courtroom and it's all of these witnesses coming up and saying what you have or haven't done.
Yeah, you're just getting beat down.
That is stressful.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Oh, my goodness.
It's got to be. All right. So for anyone new getting into it, what if you have any quick advice you could give to them?
If you're wanting to get into the legal community, I would suggest volunteering. Especially if you're in law school. There are a lot of great state resources that need the help, and you can find out what you love. Because, you know, you might love the money and you might go into something big and corporate, and there's nothing wrong with that, but you might find a passion project where every day, you know, you might come home in tears, but you wake up the next morning and you are so ready to go. And it doesn't matter if that paycheck comes in or not. If your bills are paid, the work you're doing makes your entire life a difference. And that's one of those things where you can't find out what that is for you until you start getting your hands dirty.
Right.
Until you're getting involved. And then that opens up all these other doors because, again, there are these great resources that if you're not involved, you don't know about.
Right.
Which can make you just a better person in your community.
You don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
You know? All right. And then for any future clients, what kind of advice do you have for them?
Please trust me. Listen, I take attorney-client privilege incredibly seriously, which is why a lot of this was exceedingly vague. but the relationship between an attorney and their client is sacred. Like, I would probably tell on my own mom, sorry, mom, before I would tell on my clients, because, you know, the entire reason I'm able to advocate for them wholeheartedly with my full chest is because I already know the mess and dirt that I'm going to have to probably deal with. I know what I'm going to have to mitigate.
Yeah.
But trust me, there are enough people that are concerned enough that no matter what it is, something's likely going to come out.
Right.
So just trust me to tell me, listen, Mimi, I'm so sorry. This happened. I know it doesn't look good, but if I don't have a way to help you in that moment, I very likely have steps to take to mitigate.
Right. It was like, it's like my brother or my mom always used to tell me when I was a kid, like, if you get in trouble, like, tell us exactly what happened. We can't go to bat for you.
If we don't know.
If we don't know what happened. If you're lying to us and we go up there and lie to someone else, like, it doesn't look good.
No. And I can't tell you how many times, and I understand, like, self-preservation is a very, very strong motivating factor. It is for all of us, even me, especially me. but part of the reason you're given an attorney is you're not supposed to know how this works.
All right.
Lawyers made a complicated system, so we have jobs. So you do need that person in your corner. And I get that, you know, I might have to tell you no 20 times. I might have to tell you, I don't think that's likely to work, or I don't think that's likely to get you the thing you want at the end.
Right.
If you want to keep pushing that, that's fine. I am here to tell you what I think will happen 1,000%, but I also don't know. I'm not the judge. So I could be focusing on the wrong thing. So just keep giving me all the details so I can keep negotiating and I can keep working with.
Right.
But I'm not going to sit there with, like, your dirty laundry going, oh, guess what I heard? Like, yeah. That's not, no, there are no group chats.
Right. Like, if you tell me everything that I need to know, then I might be able to work my way around some things with certain people.
Mm-hmm.
But, right, you're not going to be out there like, well, my client actually just told me.
No, good Lord.
Let me pull up this text message, just told me. You know, no, you're not going to do that. That's just not.
No. And it's one of those things one of the skills I've definitely learned from outside of the legal field is how to try to work on establishing that trust.
Right.
And I tell my clients all the time, just give me the chance to earn your trust. I know that, like, as far as you know, my name was pulled out of a hat and I just poofed out of nowhere and you don't know who I am.
Right.
I get that. But give me the opportunity to earn your trust. Give me the chance to show you that I want to help you.
Yeah. Yeah, help me help you.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think that's definitely super important. And well, I'm glad that I was able to get you on here and make the schedules work. It's fun. It's fun. I'm just trying to get more people who deal with other people face to face, you know, like, because there's people. Mm-hmm. There's real people there.
And I mean, there's so many people that aren't technically service industry right now, but those skills proliferate through all kinds of different industries. Like,
yes.
You learn all those great soft skills. You learn how to get yelled at in the face.
Yeah.
You learn how to dodge ketchup real quick.
Yeah.
And that translates.
Right. You definitely, these service industry jobs, whether, you know, people like to, I hate using the phrase like, well, people like to believe in them or not. They're real. So it doesn't matter whether you believe in a certain job or not, but it's real. You know, whether you're serving, whether you're working at McDonald's, whether you're working at a Starbucks or anything like that, like,
you're learning time management. You're learning how to deal with people. You're learning how to deal with coworkers. You're learning stress management. You're learning all these other things.
Yeah, you're also learning how to operate within rules. You know what I mean? Like, there's very strict rules when it comes to, like, you thought school was, like, strict. Go work at a Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to them, you know, for a week straight without even being on a floor, tell you exactly what you have to do and when you have to do it.
And having that immediate feedback that often, if it's negative, isn't even based on you. You know, the person coming in and ordering their coffee might be having a terrible day and they take it out on you. And it's one of those things where you have to learn how to take that in, pivot, and not just sit there and break down and focus on it.
Right. It's a business transaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's a business. Everything is a business.
It is your money for my time.
Exactly. So, you know, understand that. You know, when you are buying something, that is your money, their time. You know what I mean? But also, they're people. They're people there. So, like, you can't you shouldn't always take a poop on someone because you're having a bad day. But I get it. Like, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, it's a business transaction. So just yes and okay and sorry. And they're out the door and forget it. Now it's the next one.
And now maybe there's a cute puppy coming in to get a pup cup.
Right, exactly. Exactly. All right. Thank you, Mimi, so much.
Thank you so much.
This has been The Customer Isn't Always Right. It airs Wednesdays at 8, or you can catch it. You can catch it at 107.5 FM or WRUU.org, and you can catch it on, oh my God, WRUU.creek.fm. Sorry, I'm so tired. I'll catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.